providential in a way that the church gives us this feast of the Holy Family so close to Christmas, the birth of Christ. Most of us have spent a few days with the family in the recent past, and we can attest to the joys and sometimes the challenges that come with that experience with full hearts. So tonight, in a way, is an opportunity to reflect on how the Holy Family sheds light on all families, including our own, and how our families can shed light on the Holy Family. The gospel that's chosen for this weekend comes from Luke chapter 2. Jesus is 12. He goes with Joseph and Mary to Jerusalem. It's an important first in his life, but also an important first in the gospels themselves. This passage from Luke chapter 2 is the first time that the words of Jesus are recorded in the gospels. But there's also a way that there's some foreshadowing that's at work in this gospel passage. Foreshadows, in a way, the end of Christ's life when he returns to Jerusalem for his final days and his passion and death. The word passion in English comes from a Latin word, patior, that means suffering. It's a pretty clear association that one's passion denotes a type of suffering. There's another English word that has this same root that I'd like to speak about a little bit tonight. And it's the word patience. Patience comes from this same root. And it makes sense when we reflect on the difficulty of patience that it does involve a bit of suffering. And it's something that we have many opportunities to practice, not over the course of years, but every day we face challenges when it comes to patience. I've been a priest for over 8 years. I don't have any hard statistics to back this up. But I would wager that the most confessed sin is some type of impatience, struggling with this virtue in our lives. The good news is there will be an opportunity to exercise patience very soon, probably before the end of the day. But the bad news is there's going to be an occasion in which one might be impatient very soon, possibly before the end of the day. One of the things that's fascinating about this particular virtue is that it's very subtle. If someone is joyful or kind, there's a surface, external gesture that manifests this particular virtue. But patience is a little bit different in a subtle way. If someone is being patient, they're usually not doing something. They're not getting upset. They're not shouting. They're not using profanity. It's fascinating that patience is under the surface of life, which may be why it's a little bit misplaced in our lives, because you have to be subtle to notice a quiet virtue like this. One of the great things, though, about patience is that it has the capacity to shape our lives. It's at work very deep within us, shapes the world around us. We can say, too, of our own lives, I think for each of us, that we have been shaped by the patience of others. Think of our parents, our elders, when we were small. We think of the many teachers that we've had throughout life. Isn't there great patience that goes into teaching someone something that they don't know, but that you already know? It's astonishing how much lavish patience is given to us in life. It shapes who we are. If we live it out, we shape the world around us. There's a gentleman who comes to the weekday mass here at the cathedral. He works downtown and gave me a book this fall that's by a French priest. Jacques Philippe is his name. I don't remember the book. He writes on the spiritual life. But he had some fascinating words on this virtue of patience, how we apply it to other people. And I want to share with you just a few sentences tonight. And I think it's helpful if you picture someone who challenges your patience regularly when you hear these words. So no one has had a hard time at any of the masses before this one thinking of somebody. So you might just picture a person. You don't have to tell them who you're thinking of, even if they're with you tonight. Just think of someone who kind of pushes your buttons, challenges patience. So is everybody, has got somebody at this point? Are you ready for this? Okay. Think of that person. So this is what he says. If the Lord has still not transformed this person, has not relieved him of such and such an imperfection, it is because he puts up with him as he is. He waits with patience the opportune moment. Then I must do likewise. I must pray and be patient. Why be more demanding and impatient than God? It's a fascinating insight that underscores the overwhelming, astonishing patience of God towards humanity. And can't we say that we felt this, experienced it in our own lives, God's patience toward us? We don't want to waste this great gift that God is giving us. And when we share it with other people, there is a way in which we are being something like God by sharing this with others. I'd offer that there's a way of thinking of the Holy Family as holy because they're a school of patience in a way. How do we know this? Because they're willing to suffer for one another. They give this gift in a lavish way to one another. It's our invitation to take on this virtue from them. Notice that we don't call them the perfect family. And if we don't say this of these three, I think we can give up on the illusion that our own families would become perfect. But they can be holy if we grow in this virtue of patience together, even to the extent of suffering for those we love. If we practice it well in our families, we're all the more equipped to share it then with other people, even strangers that we meet. Sometimes the church refers to the family as the domestic church, the church in microcosm, in a small home, together with these people. It's a fascinating way to think of a family. If you take it even farther, I think you could say that the church itself is a bit like a universal family. In every country, every continent, celebrating, worshiping in the same way. The church is like this universal family in which we grow in virtue so that we can share virtue in our world. I'd like to offer, just in closing, a little insight into the last line of today's gospel that's particularly fascinating, I think. It says, "And Jesus advanced in wisdom, age, and favor before God and man." It's kind of fascinating to think about Luke's description of Christ and his hidden years in this way. Does it mean on one hand that Christ becomes more favorable to the Father in these years? It's a little hard to believe that because Jesus is already pleasing to the Father throughout his earthly life. How can he be more pleasing? I think the better way to read it is to say that he grows in his awareness that he is pleasing to the Father. This is something that each of us can learn from. As we leave a year and we enter a new one, we want to do everything we can with our actions to do what is pleasing to God. But when it comes to our being, it's good to acknowledge that somehow our being is pleasing to God. He blesses us with life. He makes us in his image and likeness. If we cling to the reality, we grow in the awareness that our lives, the life that God gives us, that he holds in being, is pleasing to God. It has a way of making everything else much simpler in life.